This week on GRBN, things are heating up in the studio as Mac and Lucky clash over their new book, The Lightning Struck Heart by T.J. Clune. In my opinion, this book isn't poorly written. It's maybe just not for you.
Well, in my opinion, you have bad opinions.
Okay, well, if you didn't really want to read the book, then why did you pick it?
Because the other options you brought to the table were terrible.
You said this was a safe space. These so-called gentlemen duke it out. Will the world of romance be shaken to its very knees?
I mean, Kilf made me laugh, but it was everybody's too horny.
Everybody's horny.
Yeah, exactly. That's the problem.
In life, Lucky, in life. Okay, you're gonna roll your eyes at me?
Wouldn't be the first time.
Meanwhile, things are heating up in paradise, and Jessica's had enough.
I'm sitting here, I had made a toast, and then there was the longest awkward silence, and I just sat here and was embarrassed and had to, like, does anybody want to spend time with me?
Brothers torn apart. I don't know, Lucky. Maybe if you read more books, you would understand what I'm talking about.
You don't sound much like a gentleman right now, man.
Dude, just fuck off.
I will walk.
You wouldn't dare. Could this be the end of friendship?
Best friends.
Oh, wow. Well, welcome back to the Gentleman's Romantic Book Nook, a journey into love in literature. I am your co-host, Lucky, and with me, as always,
your co-host, Mac W. Monty, broadcasting to you live from Oregon. I am not at liberty to disclose my exact location.
And we are back with you, our fans, our family, with the first 10 chapters of The Lightning Struck Heart by T.J. Clune. Mac, what are your feelings? What's your gut saying to you right now?
I would say that this book is a lot like Paul Blart Mall Cop, or like Adam Sandler Netflix movies. And you either like that type of movie or you don't. And it's hard for those types of people to understand each other, like people who like it and people who don't. And I don't understand this book. I don't really understand why it has the fan base that it does. But this is a journey into love and literature, so I'm like down to try and understand it. But it would get a bogus diagnosis from me as a doctor.
I just want to make sure our fans heard that. Mac is down to try anything.
Nope, didn't say that. What was your take?
Well, it's hard to get past the indigestion I feel after having to think about both this book and Paul Blart Mall Cop. You know, I've been pretty open with the books that we've read so far, where I feel like I give it a lot of opportunity and I really try to find something in that book that I'm personally going to like or connect to. Mm-hmm. I don't like this book. I don't like it. It's not for me. You make an interesting point, right? Like, There's definitely a fan base that enjoys a book specifically like this, but I am not of that fan base. I can't really bring myself to be of that fan base.
Yeah, it's not the kind of book that's for me. I honestly found it crass. It uses sex as a joke to gross out the reader and to embarrass its characters. Uses these wacky, quirky scenarios to try and make the reader laugh, like unicorns sometimes poop out rainbows and cookies. And I often felt like the Venn diagram of Hot Topic shoppers and fans of this book would just be like a normal circle. And maybe it's kind of like sophomoric, and maybe in like high school or middle school, I would have found this very funny. But what intrigues me is this book has a lot of fans, and it has people who really find it near and dear to their heart. And it sold quite well. He's made a little bit of a name for himself on this series of books.
That's interesting. You bring up that kind of middle school attitude. Because specifically while reading this, I was thinking the whole time, like, this is a young adult novel where the young adult novel writer was like, what if also we talked about dicks the entire book?
Yeah, it reads almost like a dirty screenplay or young adult story where they like cranked the rating up to XXX.
Twilight, the uncensored edition.
Because half the book is banter, characters exchanging like XXX rated quips and jabs. Like, no, there is no single conversation in this book so far that is devoid of jokes. It's all crass, sarcastic humor. You'll appreciate this, Lucky, not to out you again as an anime fan, but it's like a really horny anime that I do not want to watch.
Which is the most upsetting thing about anime in general is, like, you're watching this very cool story. It's this great fantasy world. You really appreciate the world building. And then the main character is, like, fondling somebody who... they're not against it, but they are saying no. So, I mean, it's just like this very uncomfortable moment. And I you're right. I do feel that while reading this book. I want to pause at something. I think.
Okay.
Just for the rest of this book, for the rest of this reading. This
hold
episode.
On. Let me consider it. I'll allow it.
Okay. Well, I'm the editor. I'd like to posit that this book is written in such a way that the characters have so little development because of how many quippy one-liners there are that it reads like TJ Klune making jokes to himself.
Okay, but all that being said, I don't think that TJ Klune is a bad writer. I don't think he's trying to write a better book and failing with The Lightning Struck Heart. He knows exactly what he's doing. He knows and understands his audience, which is one of the most important things you need to be a successful author. And I think he had a lot of fun writing this. So, you know, I said earlier, I compared it to Paul Blart Mall Cop, which doesn't sound like a compliment, but that movie made bank. And obviously that movie is incredibly sexist, whereas this story is actually like really, well, actually there's no women to speak of in the entire story.
Except for his mom.
Who's fawns over him. But that this book is fairly inclusive as far as it goes. But they're both really successful, kind of niche things that like tap into something that is both somehow very popular, but also not like critically well done. It's this weird, it's like a fever dream. I can't stop thinking about this book. It's like I was forced to watch a bad CW show, and now I'm like posting online about it on Reddit, and I don't know why. I don't know. I don't know why I can't stop thinking about this book.
Well, just like CW's The Flash, why don't we zoom into the review?
I do want to preface before you do the recap for this book. Lucky, you always do the recaps, and I thank you for that. You expressed some doubts about continuing this book. And so this is the first book that I took my liberty of writing my own notes. So I'm eager to check mine as you read your explanation and see where we differ on some of these events that happened.
I appreciate two things about what you just said. One, that you did a review, so at any point I can pull the ripcord and bail if I'd like to. And two, you're right. I think the audience needs to know this. This is a book that I feel like we should stop reading, but I'm not willing to give up on this journey just yet.
Okay, but it's like we're on a submarine. And when you want to launch the nukes on the sub, you've got to have two seamen far apart, and they each have a key, and they have to turn their keys at the same time to launch the nukes. And so we each have to turn our keys. And so you're saying your key is already turned?
I'm saying that enough friction has built up with this seaman that my key is turned.
I didn't know you were such a submariner.
Submariner.
Oh, yeah. No, he's Marvel. We can't go.
This isn't that
epic of a crossover.
This is our DC episode.
Fuck.
Our adventure begins in the kingdom of Arania with trouble. The hero and protagonist Sam of Wilds, along with trusty sidekick slash partner Gary the Hornless Gay Unicorn, have been captured by an evil wizard named Lartan the Darkleaf, a douche by all estimates. While trying to monologue his evil plans away, Sam and Gary cause a distraction with a highly graphic and sexual retelling of the many sexual encounters both Gary and his parents have. Through this banter, we learn the first tidbits of story. Gary's horn has been stolen. Sam of Wilds is the apprentice of a powerful wizard, Morgan of Shadows, and the fact that Sam is a virgin.
So rarely does the first chapter of a book give the reader too much information. But I actually like this chapter. It's a bit of a kick in the teeth if you're not knowing what you're getting into, because it's got a lot of, just out of the gate, we've got this gay hornless unicorn talking about his parents going to orgies. And Sam of Wilds is talking about his virginity, his flower, which we talk about way too much in this whole book.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
But this is kind of a rollicking adventure. At least it starts with them in the clutches of a dark wizard. And the monologuing part reminded me, you know, of The Incredibles.
An incredible choice.
But it actually sort of started me off with some sense of rollicking adventure.
That's funny. I kind of felt that way, too. Like when they started making fun of the monologues, I thought, whoa, this is the comedy I'm looking for. And then the unicorn talked about his parents fucking people all the time. And I was like, I maybe pulled the trigger too quickly on this book choice.
I'm eager to see how you describe how they brutally murder this dark wizard.
The distraction pays off as Tiggy, Sam and Gary's giant friend, arrives to smash Lartan to bits. Now freed, the trio escapes the dismal sight of their capture. Jumping into a vignette, we flash back to learn of Sam's life in the slums in the city of Locks. Happy with his parents and their lifestyle, Sam never found himself dreaming of magic and power, just things to make himself and loved ones happy. One day, when Sam was 11, while fleeing from a group of teenagers, he sees a flash of green and turns the boys into solid stone.
He always knew how to get the boys rock hard.
As I think he has said multiple times in this book,
yeah, it's worth noting that Sam is a homosexual, as is Gary, the hornless unicorn. Tiggy, unknown sexuality. Everyone's sexuality is divulged in the book, and that's the only reason that I'm bringing this up. The most obscure side characters are revealed to either be, whether it's gay, bisexual, straight, ace, they tell you exactly who they are, which is kind of what I like about this book. It is loud and proud, even if it's not very good.
Yeah, that's something we'll touch on, certainly. Like, Mac makes a really good point. Constantly, whenever you meet a new character, you understand very quickly their sexual orientation.
I ran into Giuseppe, the gardener at the castle. He wanted to fuck me with his eyes. I could see that he knew that he wanted to masturbate about me. That's the kind of stuff that's in this book.
Shortly after, the king's wizard, Morgan of Shadows, comes to investigate the surge of magic. Charmed by both the power he holds and his rapier wit, Morgan makes Sam into his wizard's apprentice, skyrocketing the Haversford social status and securing comfort for life. Or so Sam thinks. Back in the present, our trio makes their way to the City of Locks. Upon their arrival, they learn of a special ceremony that evening involving Sam's hunky dream night. Sam must brave the angry faces of Morgan and his parents before finally heading back to his room to freshen up for the feast. And this is a little bit quick because, like, there's a lot of, like, sexual innuendo banter going on. But basically,
yeah.
He gets back. He's looking forward to this evening celebration for this night that he, I guess, masturbates to from afar. But he's, like, getting the shit dunked on him because he's, like, always getting captured. He's always getting into trouble. It's also showing this moment of, like, his family supporting him and, like, how everybody in his entourage is so, like, Team Sam.
Yes, even everyone is basically in love with Sam of Wilds, except for Prince Justin, who we will meet shortly. But this sexy knight, who will shortly become the knight commander, Sir Ryan, great name, by the way, Ryan Foxheart. He's like a dreamboat popsicle slice of prime rib to Sam. And Sam, like, can't contain any part of him when he sees him. But, like, the dude doesn't even know that he exists. So it's this classic, like, cast situation. Although they could very easily date, except for one thing.
However, on his way to his room, Sam runs smack into hunky knight Ryan Foxheart in a not-so-meet-cute. Right when sparks begin to fly and dreams of masturbation run rampant, royal cockblocker Prince Justin arrives to remind Sam of his place. Downtrodden, Sam flees to Gary to braid his hair and complain the night away. Feeling better after venting to Gary, Sam dresses to the nines to impress Ryan during his big ceremony being crowned the new knight commander. At the ceremony, we are introduced to the king, a total kilf to Gary and Sam.
Yeah, Gary refers to the king as a kilf, which I did get a good laugh out of me. I think I laughed maybe four times in these chapters.
My first laugh.
That's my first laugh, yeah.
Wait, hang on. That's reductive. My first laugh was when they made the joke about the montage. I did chuckle a little bit at that. This was my second laugh.
I exhaled out of my nose on the monologuing line. I wouldn't call it a laugh.
A humorous snort.
But Kilf got me.
While the two quip and make sexual innuendos through the ceremony, the king makes two shocking announcements. Dreamboat Ryan is now engaged to the Dillweed Prince Justin, and the after party for the ceremony will be a group date to find Sam a man. Yeah, this is following the scene where Gary, the unicorn, and the king have, like, a pretty obvious connection and make me feel like at one point they fucked, which is, like, after Bear, I promise never again, and I'm very worried about this reading.
Gary doesn't flirt with any unicorns, of which we have met none, or horses. Gary exclusively flirts with the hunky dreamboats in the story, which is just bestial. A T, bestiality. That's, I don't like it. It makes
bestial
me uncomfortable.
A T. Sam's group date from hell begins with a line of men eager to earn his attention. Thanks to the support of his friends and the confidence of alcohol, he is able to finally enjoy himself by making his suitors uncomfortable and scaring them away. Though he is mildly charmed by the timid Todd, Sam's night explodes into Desire Town as Ryan steps in to sweep him off his feet.
Yeah, before Ryan dances with him, he meets such a eligible bachelors as a man who licks his hand and a man who wants to have a three-way dance with his grandmother's ashes. So Todd with the big ears is certainly not too offensive compared to the competition.
And as far as I can tell, he likes the big ears. It's just phrased in such a way that that's maybe the most noticeable quality, but he doesn't stop talking about it. After a session of what is described as dance fucking, Sam escapes into the garden to get some air and ponder. As Tiggy, Gary, and Sam make the obligatory dick jokes, Ryan confronts the trio under the guise of noble protector. Sam and Ryan get into a fight about their obvious attraction to each other, ending with Ryan volunteering to chaperone Sam's upcoming date with Todd. As the big date with Todd creeps closer, we learn a few tidbits about Sam's grimoire and how magic works in this world. Sam, it turns out, is so powerful even Morgan doesn't know his upper limits, a secret they both work hard to keep safe.
We almost got something very interesting with the grimoire and some of the magic lore, because I kind of like the way that the magic works in this universe.
I feel like we've been candid about this. I'm a big nerd. I'm not sure how you describe yourself. I don't want to label you, but you're a nerd as well. I was very interested in the world building. I was so excited about, like, ooh, magic based off of color, and you need a book to write your spells in. And then, like, never really comes up again. Kind of like an offshoot story.
Every wizard is supposed to make their own grimoire, and they're pulling magic from the corners of their eyes into existence with blinding lightning colors of green and gold. It's described very nicely. It's described very beautifully, actually, the way that they summon their powers. But there's unfortunately very little of it in these first 10 chapters. Although we do get a little bit here in the when he goes on his date with Todd, which I'll let you get to in your own time. Whenever you...
This is actually the mid-episode break. So.
Oh, okay. Great. Yeah, whatever. I'd like to take a moment to thank this week's sponsor. Let me see. Oh, it's TJ Klune.
What? Wait. You said we never sell out.
Well, thanks, TJ, for the sponsorship. I thought your book... I know. You know what? I can't sell out. I'm not enjoying it that much. But you know what? You do, man. You do you, because you are like you are being a success. You're writing gay books for gay readers and straight readers alike. And man, hey, you're killing it.
We like your writing style. We appreciate you and what you do. This book's not our cup of tea.
Well, thanks, TJ, for writing in. Now back to the show.
The day of the big date finally upon him, Sam breaks the tension of the awkward threesome with a classic blowjob joke. The night only gets more uncomfortable from there, as Sam can't stop focusing on Ryan while dining at Todd's family's hotel. This uncomfortable tableau is broken up by a group of dark wizards coming to claim their revenge for their slain compatriot. Triggered at the thought of anyone hurting Ryan, Sam unveils his terrible power, handily stopping the wizards.
Yeah, he is not worried about these dark wizards killing Todd so much. I think maybe because Todd served him a dish that sounds delicious to me, but is deathly allergic to Sam of Wilds.
That seems also... Okay, hang on. I have multiple opinions. I was about to lean in one direction, and I flipped back. It seems crazy to be that upset about not knowing somebody's allergies. But also, if you're treating them to such a fancy dinner, you may want to maybe just ask really quick, like, hey, any allergies?
The dish in question, for those of you who, for whatever reason, are not reading along with us, was insane. A roast duck with blueberry sauce, which sounds fucking amazing to me. But would kill Sam of Wilds, who's allergic to not only duck, but also blueberries.
Yeah, he's allergic to both things. Like, I can't.
And
is he a bubble boy? He has magic. Can't he just cure his allergies?
No, that's the one thing a grimoire can never do. You should have read chapter 2 a little bit more closely,
he
Lucky.
He fucking turned popcorn into fireworks. So you could huff my duff with that opinion.
And not to, like, dig too deeply into this specific minutia that you didn't even bother to put into your description. But it was a theme night at the hotel of duck and blueberries, which Todd has no explanation for. That was my second laugh was of the book, is where he was like, oh, by the way, I can't order you anything else. It's just I get you more potatoes and bread. And Sam's like, oh, the carbs.
I guess I don't disagree, but a dinner of like French fries and some garlic bread. Yeah, well, rough on the indigestion. Kind of tasty in the moment.
Yeah, a bunch of home fries, garlic bread, and apple wine. Tell me you're not up at 2 a.m. singing Hail Mary to the porcelain highway.
Wow. That's definitely staying in the show for sure.
If that's in the show, I will walk.
Safe from the wizards, but under scorn from Morgan, Sam laments about the article written about the event. Surrounded by his entourage, he dissects the night, hoping to learn more about his magic. and his surprise engagement to Todd. Heading back to the gardens to clear his head, Sam has a heavy, existential moment speaking to the stars. Of course, this moment is interrupted by none other than dream hunk Ryan Foxhart. The two dance around admitting their feelings for each other as Sam reveals his plans to leave town for a while. While the two get hot and bothered and all close, nothing comes of the moment as they part for the evening.
I'm not sure if this has happened yet in the reading, but something I want to point out that we learn about Morgan of Shadows, who is the mentor to Sam. He is an asexual character and proud of it. And I thought that was a really cool inclusion, because a lot of times you'll see in romance stories lesbian or gay or bisexual characters, but it's really rare to see an ace character. I would be very, very rare to see one as a main character, and, you know, rare enough to see it as a side character. But I thought it was cool that he not only was asexual, but he had also had this very strong romantic relationship with someone in his past that was non-physical.
I was very worried about that moment, because right after Morgan admits, or I guess not admits, but confesses his asexuality, Sam takes it in kind of a jokey way, being like, oh, then I'm asexual too. Don't make me go doing this date thing. Like,
right.
I got very nervous in that moment, but you're right. It comes around in this nice touching way that we find out, you know, Morgan had this relationship for a long time, and that was his cornerstone, the person that made his magic work better.
And honestly, give me that story. I want the asexual wizard story in this universe, not only because they're underrepresented in fiction across the board, but also because this world is way too horny for me. And I think I could go for a character that's maybe not trying to jerk off to every other character that they meet.
A week later, Sam prepares to depart for the far north to meet the Grand Wizard, continuing his training. As he goes about gathering supplies and saying his goodbyes, he is approached by Prince Justin, who asks for some quality time. Disappointed, but with no other options, Sam follows Justin to an empty sparring ground. As Justin explains why they are there, Sam quickly learns he's about to get the beatdown for flirting with Justin's man.
Yeah, Justin takes Sam out to the training grounds to give him a lesson on how to be an absolute tool. But actually, this is probably my favorite chapter of the book, because we have, like I told you earlier, I think that too much of this book is dialogue. It's too much witty sexual dialogue, which can be funny in small doses, but it really hits that over the head. This chapter has dialogue that is slightly sexual, but is moving the plot forward. Justin is expressing his frustrations that he knows his lover is in love with someone else and telling this person who he doesn't respect to back off. And the story is actually progressing, and they're actually like having this like biting repartee. And it was like a bit of a breath of fresh air, because we had so much story. We were finally getting some plot in this chapter.
As things escalate with Sam using magic, a terrifying dragon appears on the horizon. Sam tries valiantly to save the prince and himself. However, the dragon is too powerful and magical to boot. He knocks Sam through a shed, though not before making some hypersexual suggestions. He swipes Prince Justin into his powerful talons, flying him away to become part of his horde.
Yeah, the dragon insults Sam and says something like, "You're a cute one, aren't you? I'd love to take you back to my horde and F your brains out. Seems like you're a wizard, so that's going to be a no-go. I'll take this handsome slice of meat instead." This is a very sexually aggressive dragon. Not towards other dragons, but to humans. I did like how Sam of Wilds fought back against this creature. As the dragon comes up to sort of engulf them in flames, Sam is able to create this thick barrier of ice above them. And it was this like weirdly harrowing moment. And reading the book, I kind of got caught up in the action of it. And then the dragon starts talking about how he's going to F their brains out in his horde. And yeah. I sort of lost it again. But I really liked that piece of it.
Yeah, it was nice for 1 second. Waking up after his treacherous encounter with the aggressively sexual dragon, Sam breaks down the plan to rescue Prince Justin with his entourage.
What a twist.
The king will send him and Ryan to save the prince in classic fantasy adventure style. As Sam prepares for the adventure, Ryan confronts him on his risky decision to protect the prince.
Just want to point out that everybody in this book is so against Sam that no matter what he does, somebody has a problem with it. And I think that's TJ Klune's idea of conflict, is that whatever, even if his actions are totally understandable, and maybe this is more indicative of that young adult angle you were talking about earlier, because I feel like the same thing happens to like Katniss Everdeen or some of the characters in Harry Potter, where you have, like, no matter what Harry does, he gets chastised. And if, even if he's doing the right thing, he has detention with Hagrid. And this kind of feels
or,
like
or Snippers.
His
or,
parents, you know, he comes home too late. He got caught. Even if he succeeds, everybody's just bitching at him. And it honestly gets a little annoying. And this was the first scene where Sam actually stands up to someone and is like, you know what? Kind of F off, because I really did the best I could. And if you don't see that, maybe I'm not as in love with you as I thought. And so Sam is maybe, Lucky, I see the look on your face, maybe trying to step out on his own and will become a character with actual growth.
I mean, it's a dichotomy between the two, right? Because you're talking about people being against him. That's what, a 10% of the book. Whereas the rest of the time, all of these same characters are constantly saying, we love you, you're perfect, your hair looks great, we support you. Like, there is this almost vomit of support that we see from every character that is, like, a little preposterous. There's a specific scene where he's talking to the entourage, with his parents, Morgan, Tiggy, Gary, where the only input his father has is complimenting his pants and his hair. And it's like, that to me, that's buck wild, that there's this such a need for this character to be so coddled that they do this. But then on the other side, what you're saying, like, and then also berate every decision they make, like, that's just not a healthy way to live.
He acts like a teenager, but he's sexually active and desiring like an adult. I mean, what I'm saying is that there's adult content with this character. So if he were 15, it would be totally inappropriate. But he acts outside of the sexual stuff. He acts like a teenager. So it's like this weird dichotomy of, like, mentally he's almost like a 15-year-old, but physically he's having the desires of a, you know, 25-year-old horn dog.
Again, Sam and Ryan basically admit their feelings for each other, but are both too dim to realize it. Making a dramatic exit, Sam bitches to Gary and Tiggy for a while before heading out on a secret meeting before his sojourn begins. Following a thread I never thought we'd return to in a million years, Sam dons a wig and a fake beard to secretly attend the meeting of Ryan Foxcart Fan Club.
God, just when you thought the story was going to get going, when they finally have their quest to rescue the kidnapped prince from a dragon, we've gotten our Shrek quest. We're ready to go. Shrek Quest, also my app as a Shrek fan app. Download it now. $2.99.
I told you not to promote that on the show.
$2.99.
I'll cut it out every time.
For Shrek Quest, you can get it on the Russian iPhone store.
We learn Sam's arch enemy is a 16-year-old girl named Tina who runs this club, setting Sam up as the number one creepy weirdo of all time. He and the fan club bicker about Ryan until they are interrupted by the man himself. Ryan graciously takes his time with the fan club, even encouraging the debate between Prince Justin and Sam as a potential husband. Sam, or Mervin, as he calls himself in disguise.
Tootsie moment here. God.
Almost blows his cover multiple times, unable to regain a modicum of discretion. Our reading ends as Ryan slips Mervin a note, revealing he is secretly a Sam girl too.
There's a couple laughs in this chapter, but mostly how ridiculous it was. I think I sent you a message when I got to this chapter of, like, dude, chapter 10 is a plot blocker, is what I believe the term that I used.
It's an excellent term, because we finally, you're saying this earlier, we had a mission. We have, like, our setup. Mm-hmm. That would have been such a tasty place for the podcast to end when they're just about to start their quest. But instead, this obscure joke that, admittedly, I thought was funny the first time it was brought up, this obscure joke of this fan club for the guy that he masturbates
Lord
to.
Lord in, like, heaven, strike me down.
This is it, God. This is your moment. I prostrate myself for the lightning bolt.
Good Monday.
Final thoughts on this last chapter. It took such a crazy turn. It completely blocked the plot, but it also made me want to stop reading the book. So there was not a good but after that.
I like how open it is about sex and sexuality and being gay or bi or ace or whatever. It seems very accepted in this world. And I like that Sam of Wilde's parents are alive and supportive. But, you know, what I find frustrating is that the book seemingly understands what it is. Like, it makes fun of tropes. They call the bad guy a monologuing villain when he's explaining his evil plan. And the banter is, like, kind of like Buffy, and that it's meant to be self-aware. But then it falls into the worst tropes itself. Like, it does the worst things. Like, clearly Sir Ryan is secretly in love with Sam but can't admit it. He stumbles over his words. Like, you mean a lot to me. I mean, you mean a lot to the kingdom, Sam. And Sam not being able to contain himself is like super well-torn territory. And maybe if TJ had kept pushing the boundaries, it would be less stereotypical. But again, I don't think he wanted to push this any further than it is. Like, he didn't fail in writing this book. It's exactly the product he wanted to create. And I guess I respect him for putting out something so unique. But man, I am not the target audience for this book.
I mean, I think it's okay for us to not like a book, but also understand what the book was trying to accomplish, right? I mean, that's the point of the journey. We started this journey because we didn't like romance. And I don't think the point of it was for us to like romance at the end. I think it was for us to understand the romance genre and what people take out of that. And you're making a very good point right here, right? We can see what people get out of this book. It's certainly not for us, but I feel like we've taken a really good step on our journey.
And if you're listening to this and you disagree, I want to hear from you more than people who are with us on this. Like, if you like The Lightning Struck Heart, please, please, please send us an email. That is grbooknook@gmail.com. Rant as much as you want about what you like about this book. I would love to read an excerpt of your praise on the show and try and understand where you're coming from on loving this book, because I struggle a little bit here and there to like connect with the text. And I'd love to hear from some fans of TJ Klune if you are out there.
And if you agree with us that this is not a very good book, this is the perfect opportunity to let us know you stand in solidarity with the GRBN gentleman. You can tweet at us or get at our Instagram. That's @GRBookNook. We are all over the place with great memes and also looking for somebody to chat with about this book and all the books we've read so far.
And if you're a fan of the show and you've been for a while, I really encourage you to take a moment and head over to Apple Podcasts, where you can leave a review for the show. That means a lot and it gets us up on the charts. And we don't promote the show in really any way other than some like dumb memes that I post on Instagram. So if you're out there, give us a review. And if not that, maybe next time romance novels or romance movies come up in conversation, maybe just suggest the podcast. It's a word of mouth kind of thing. And the only way we grow our audience is if you are telling your friends about it. So if you enjoy the show, please sow those seeds like Johnny Apple. What's it?
I'd like to give a shout out to RKVC for the use of our intro outro music side scroller. Loving this, very fantasy and poppy. I actually heard from one of our listeners recently, Mac, our music has been killing it lately.
Yeah, we should make a playlist, get on Spotify. If you all want to read along with us, next episode, we are allegedly going to read chapters 11 through 20. That episode's going to come out on April 23rd. I think I'm going to read those chapters. Lucky, I can see the look on his face, and he's quite look like he wants to go there.
I will read chapter 11, chapters 12 through 20, up for review. We will see how far I get into this. I don't want to give up. I don't want to give up on our listeners. So.
You would say that you're never going to give them up.
Well, Mac, now that we're at the very end of it, I do want to admit to you, and I guess to the listeners, if this makes a cut, I don't know if I'm going to finish this. We make the jokes, I might read a little bit, and then I'm out. It's not doing it for me. It's getting frustrating. Bear was kind of my limit, and that was book one. Okay, well that's fine.
I guess I'll just make my own descriptions and read them to you while you sit there and laugh at the book you didn't read.
I mean, I guess at that point I would like to reclaim my Monday mornings. I mean, I'm just saying,
oh, Garfield.
This might
Mondays.
Be the moment. Okay, I was going to try to be nice about this, but this just might be the moment that I walk. I
mean, oh, you're going to walk. Great. Yeah, do it. Could this be the end of friendship? Wait, did I already say that? That might be the end of brotherhood. Are we done here? I've been sitting in the studio for a few hours. I don't know. What is this? This is like The Bachelor or something?